Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And here as we deftly move into 2023 is my co-host, Michelle Post. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Scott. Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Happy 2023 again.
So how is the weather where you are? Because I'm in California. Most people, yes. I think, know that. It's just flat out weird.
Yes. California's going a little nuts, you know. Here it is bright, clear, sunny, and cold. But there were really intense thunderstorms last Thursday, I think it was. So, you know, I don't know. I'm still sad. My garden got frostbitten and most of it died. So I'm grieving the death of my garden.
Oh, as a follow-up to our last show. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes. Frost happens. That was part of our last show.
the weather here has been extreme. We've had the really hot, it was unseasonably hot for quite a long time. And then we went into the drastic immediate cold spell. Now we're just inundated with water, right? Whoever wrote the song, It Don't Rain in California, needs to rewrite the song.
Well, you know, the year I moved to California, 1983, was the El Nino. Do you remember that year?
Oh,
I mean, it rained all the time.
I can tell you because I was an attorney at the time and handled, I handled most of the cities along what they call the Foothill Corridor here in California.
Uh-huh.
So all my cities were in the foothills. And, you know, folks, here's a life lesson. Write this down, carry it with you forever. And remember, gravity sucks. And when the rain comes,
shit rolls downhill. Well, or rain.
So does water. And particularly after a fire season, there's nothing to keep the water. So it's all mud. Yeah. So almost every one of my cities got sued.
Mudslides.
Because they failed to prohibit the water. They failed to restrict the mud flow. Mm. In some cases, the cities actually put up barriers, and the storm waters were so, in one case, we had what's called a mud flow, a mud river event. And I don't know. So you guys have seen rivers and you've seen mud. Imagine so much mud. Yeah. And it's so liquefied that it is nothing but literally a wall. It's like a tsunami of mud coming through instantly. And it kept pushing. And because it was so heavy with the mud, it was pushing the barriers and creating damage. So I am well aware of the El Nino situation.
Well, I had just moved from Canada and my blood, you know, as they say, like your blood is thin or thick, depending on, you know, how cold you're used to living. And I was Winnipeg, Canada. And during El Nino, I swear to you, Scott, I did not wear anything but shorts and skirts that whole season. It didn't matter that it was raining. I was hot all the time in California. So I barely wore a jacket. I rarely wore pants. I was just like, and I was going in the beach. You know, when you go to an area and you see people in the water, and to you, you're like, who are those crazy people in the water? It's Canadians.
Canadians.
It's people from, you know, the Great North that are used to freezing cold temperatures, and it feels warm to them. I'm living proof. But now I'm a wimp. I'm like, don't like cold weather, you know, so I get it.
But you like 3 foot long reptiles, so that's
I don't know about that.
So I remind
like them to stay away from
by me. The way, remind me when we get into our show today to ask you about alligators in the toilets, because we had those stories here in California.
The urban myths.
Yeah, so you've got those. So what shall we talk about today? I was thinking, you know, one of the things that I've chatted with you about off air is the fact that as 2023 starts, I'm starting to work with more people who are suddenly realizing, I think because of COVID, frankly, that life is short, life is fleeting.
Yeah.
And why the hell can't they follow their passion? And so I've been spending a lot of time working with people on deciding whether they actually, this brainstorm of theirs, whether it's a profession, a passion, or a hobby.
Right.
And it's very interesting, and it might be something really good for all of the listeners to reflect on as to, you know, it's not that one is right and one is wrong, but if you're going to make a living off of something, you might want to make sure it can pay the bills. I mean, there are lots of reasons that go into the mechanics of it, but in theory, you know, if I'm selling widget A, there's got to be a need for widget A. Now, that doesn't mean people will buy it, but there's got to be a need for it. And so it's been a very interesting year re-examining and revisiting with people the difference between what they think is a need for others and what's actually a need for themselves. And so it's gotten very introspective. I don't know how your clients have gotten with you, but you know, I'm asking clients to really take a step back, and if they want to put themselves out there, to start asking, is this something I need in my life, or is it something everybody else needs?
Right.
Again, not a competition, but if it's something you need and it's unique and eclectic and, you know, very customized, personalized, then maybe it's a passion that you follow.
Right.
And it's not a profession. So it's just, it's been a very interesting start all of 1 week of 2023 with people suddenly deciding to revisit their life path.
You know, I don't know if I've helped guide in my coaching sessions about careers. I don't know if I've helped guide people in the right or the wrong direction, but I'm a practicalist. And so I have had quite a few people that want to transition careers, but they haven't necessarily done the legwork of getting the education or getting the certificate or determining if there's a need, like, you know, is there a need in your area? What area is flooded with this service? What area is underserved with this service? Because you can be in one area and have this wonderful skill set, but if the area is already flooded, you're having a harder time developing your niche and your clientele because it's flooded. Versus, so when I was in West LA, but had started my practice there, and you can't spit without hitting a therapist in West LA. Okay,
you can't spit without hitting an astrologer, a tarot reader, a life coach, an actor, a director.
It's true. Yes, I do have to say that restaurant service in Los Angeles is bar none the highest quality, because you have writers, directors, actors, you know, producers, all
they're all in trust me, they're all in between jobs. That's what's happening.
They're in between their gigs. Yes. And it pays well, the restaurant, well, to some extent, and it's flexible, right? So anyway, my point is that because of my own path, I worked full-time and went to school part-time or full-time, or found a career or a job that would work as I transitioned, because I didn't have someone else's money or support to back me up if I wasn't working. And I had all kinds of things to pay and to sustain myself in Los Angeles. And so most of the time when I have a client that's in transition, I recommend that they start with the hobby you know, they start experiencing the hobby and then they start finding clientele to pay for the hobby. As soon as you make $1, you are that profession with the IRS. So you have at least a little bit of a tax deduction while you see if that hobby can begin to replace your income. And when I saw that my counseling practice in particular was building a lot of other people's jobs, or a lot of other people's practices, because I had a part-time practice and a full-time agency gig, there was a chance for me to say, hey, you know, if I stopped working full-time and took on my private practice full-time, would it cover my expenses? And when I did the math and saw the amount of clientele coming in, it was a very easy transition.
Yeah, you know, generally, and we'll get into our show here in a minute, but generally, I tell clients to do one of two things, or actually I tell them to do two things. So they get to pick which one will make more sense to them when they're first exploring passion, hobby, profession. Yes. And that's go take a look at Shark Tank. And you forget what people are. And overseas, by the way, I think it's called Dragon's Den. It actually started as Dragon's Den. It came over here and became Shark Tank. I think it's the same.
Like folks, all good British shows.
Yeah. So, but bottom line is Dragon Den or Shark's Tank, and listen to the way the sharks talk about the business. You don't have to like the idea. You know, Mark Cuban is famous for saying, "Tell me what's new, different, or better about your business."
Yes.
And
exactly,
it's that thing. Is it scalable, et cetera? And then alternatively, here in the United States, go take a look at the IRS code. Don't look at the whole code, but go look up how the IRS distinguishes between a hobby and a profession for tax purposes.
Right.
Because that's what they're going to do. And after three years, they're going to say, are you making any money at it? And if you're making money, it's a profession. And if you're not making money, it's a hobby.
It's a hobby.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's just you can't write off all the stuff that you would otherwise. Obviously, the IRS is addressing the write-off portion of this. And so it's going to be an interesting 2023, at least for me with my particular clients, because everybody seems to, on a large scale, be revisiting where they want to go with their lives. It's exciting for me. I know it can be scary for them.
So there was also a time for those of you that might be considering going back to school, getting a master's or a PhD or something like that. There were several articles for my field. I would recommend you do your research. If you have unlimited money, stay in school forever, who cares? But if you really are trying to make a living at your profession, determine if your advanced degree will cause you a significant increase in your ability to earn a living in the time you have left in your career. Because what I found out for the master's versus PhD level for my field was a lot of people had a joke. PhD stands for piled high in debt.
Yeah.
So you can make
we actually called it piled higher and deeper, but that's okay.
Yes. So, you know, you just check out the field you're going into and determine if the amount you're investing in your education will pay off.
Well, you know, that's important. It's interesting that you say that, and I'll just leave it with this little anecdotal comment. People always think doctors and lawyers, cha-ching, right? Doctor and lawyer, you make lots of money. And when you realize today,
right,
that the amount of student debt that a lot of these folks, these new doctors and new lawyers, graduate with, for a lot of them, they're not getting out from under it. And I think, you know, among other things, obviously COVID and the insurance industry have had a lot to do with it, but we're losing doctors, folks.
I know, we are.
And the lawyers are taking more to compensate. And so at some point, I think we're all going to realize the system's a little broken, and this concept of what we do to make a living and why we work needs to change. Who knows? Maybe we'll do a show on, you know, life goals at some point. It's like, mm-hmm. why do you work? I was just mm-hmm. reading, reading an article. I won't go into it right now, but of all these things, you know, come sign up for my course. And if you sign up for my course, this is what you can attain. And then it listed, I think, 5 or 6 things. And it's like,
really?
I have that already. Why? and I think it'll be very interesting if we do a show like that for people to take a step back and reflect on, why are you working? I know you need to set aside the making money, uh-huh. right? You have to survive. But from the thrive perspective, how much yeah. of the stuff you're working towards getting do you already have? So maybe priorities need to shift a little.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Good point.
With that.
Yeah.
Let's shift into another way of making sense in the world and managing threats. Because I think that's what we're talking about today. And that is the concept of urban myths and legends.
Yes.
And I think, Michelle, you suggested this topic.
I did. I may have
said it coming out of the ghost story thing that we did last year.
Might have.
But yeah, you know, I grew up in a city that was, I'm sure all cities have this, but I prided myself on the fact of growing up in a city that had some great urban myths.
Okay.
And it's because it was a foothill city, and it was, I grew up in Upland, California, which is and was called, but back then it made sense, the city of gracious living. So you can imagine.
How nice.
You can imagine the way the city was, what the houses were like, et cetera, et cetera. And we had ghost stories. We had monster stories. We had, you name it. And I think I told you when we were prepping for this show, one of my favorite ones, we had Mount Baldy, which is a destination snow mountain retreat area, just north of us. And I mean, you could be there in minutes, but when the fog comes in, the foothills are literally, you can't drive because you can't see. So we had fog monsters, I was told about when I was growing up. And the fog monsters lived, they only came out when the fog came through.
Ew.
And they would watch you in the dark.
Ew.
And when the fog left, so did the monsters.
Okay. And
I was terrified of the fog.
Yes, fog I imagine.
Growing up.
yes. What was the point in telling you that?
I don't know, but have you ever noticed that urban myths and legends, and this is separate and apart from, you know, the other stuff we've talked about, it's always a friend of a friend is an urban myth is, right? An urban legend is, I know a friend, and this is what happened to them.
To their friend.
So in the same foothills where the fog monsters lived, a friend of a friend told me, a friend told me that his friend had seen the ghost of an old prospector in the hills. And he said, if you drive up there, and I used to drive up to Baldy all the time and go hiking and whatever. And at one point I pulled over to the side of the road right before. So those of you that know the area, right before the tunnels that go up into the mountains, if you look to the left, there's a grave. And in fact, there is one.
Okay.
I haven't been there in years, but back then there was a grave, and it was just this rock marking whatever. I'm assuming there was a dead body under it. That supposedly that is the miner's gravesite, and he has ever since haunted the hills. And that when you're driving up at night in particular, he would stand in the middle of the road and. But must be true, because a friend of a friend of mine said so.
Well, I was also thinking about the urban myths that aren't necessarily about fear, but they just keep getting repeated over and over and over again. Like one of them is that, have you ever heard someone say that I might have even said this, we only use 10% of our brain? Have you, heard that? That's
I'm using the other 10% to figure out that 10%. Yes.
Yeah. It's total BS. We use 100% of our brain. That is a myth that was told and has been disproven over and over and over again, but it keeps getting perpetuated because it's so catchy to try to, it's used positively, right? Like toxic positivity. We're going to talk about that, but it's used positively to say like, you can, you don't even know your own potential. You can be anything because there's this whole, you know, part of you that's not even functioning full at your full capacity yet. So you, the sky's the limit with you. But in reality, it can't be based on the fact that you only use 10% of your brain because you use 100% of your brain. There's a lot we don't know about the brain, but there's so much more that we know because of fMRIs and PET scans and CAT scans. It's amazing what we've learned about the brain, even since I was an undergrad, you know, in the 90s.
So I'm going to make you a little uncomfortable right now because I wasn't going to bring up this myth, but you just brought up that myth. And as doing research for the show, one of the myths that I've found, and I'm a big, I love the concept of neuroplasticity.
Yes.
And the whole concept that, you know, one of our, he'll actually going to be on the show in a few weeks. Anthony Jaquin wrote the book, Reality is Plastic. And it's all built around this concept. But I found this interesting, because I thought it was true, this interesting supposed myth that the brain is only plastic for certain kinds of information during specific critical periods. And therefore, the first 3 years of a child's life are decisive for development and success in life. And apparently, that's not true.
I mean, I would think that's not true. I mean, I don't know why that would make me uncomfortable. I can't, there's so much that happens between birth and adulthood that of course, you know, some things can have an impact on you, but I don't think that things necessarily have to have a permanent impact on you. I mean, we've definitely seen certain substances taken during, a child. What am I trying to say? the nurturing before the baby is born during pregnancy.
Yeah.
Jeez, my neuroplasticity has taken an all-time low rate.
There you go.
but during pregnancy, certain substances have a dramatic impact on a child's development and can lead to some permanent damage. So I can see that in most cases, there's a lot of room for growth and healing in the lifespan. And there's things that we ingest through the lifespan that make our brains shrink or function better.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, by the way, like leads to another myth, very similar to the 10% one, because I deal with this all the time in my public speaking and performance coaching roles. Mm-hmm. And that is the myth of multitasking.
Oh, what do you mean by that?
And that is that we've all heard. Well, let me just say it this way. I'm a great multitasker.
Yes. Yes.
So I thought.
Yes.
And the research actually, despite my own experience.
Yes.
We delude ourselves and it becomes this great urban myth. I can't believe you do so many things. You juggle so many things at once. You're this, you're that, you're what, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. When in fact, despite Scott's experience with that, the research tends to indicate if I would just stop multitasking,
yes,
and do one thing at a time,
yes,
I would be more productive.
But right. here's accurate.
So here's the interesting thing: the myth may actually be the urban myth may be that you have the you get the appearance of multitasking, and what you're simply doing is shifting so quickly between task, you're really focusing on one thing at a time.
Right. Or if you're really multitasking, your chances of making an error and missing something because you're moving so fast between tasks.
I do my best spell checking after I hit send.
Me too. What the heck with that? So this is a different direction than I thought we were going to go.
Yeah, I've got other things I was going to talk about. It is different.
But I really love the direction that we're randomly going in, because I think so I was thinking about where do urban myths come from? And I was thinking about like the really dark urban myths, and they kind of seem to come from fear or lack of exposure to difference, or maybe some racism or sexism, all the isms kind of thing. But they serve as sort of a morality or cautionary tale kind of thing. I do think they lead us to separatism. Like, I'll give you an example of the opposite of what we've been talking about, like sort of the negative. When I was a little suburban knight, you know, Californian, and I was headed to the big city, UCLA, for undergrad.
Right? Wait, is that what we Californians, native Californians, are like? What you just did?
What?
Just
people can't see me on video. I'm kind of hopping with my arms. I think that's just more my imitation of being a little kid, excited, you know, to leave the home and go off to school and be an adult now and wear my big kid pants now and whatever. My parents were telling me, you know, and I drove the dumpiest brown hatchback, what's now Nissan. It was Datsun before. I mean,
of course it was. I remember that.
Would not attract a thief for a million miles.
I had a Datsun B210. I get it.
I had a Datsun 310. Is that what they were? Yeah, it was a 310.
I had the 210. You graduated to the 310.
Yes. So so anyway, I you know, my first car. Well, anyway, somebody will steal that from me later. So I'm in this car, and they're telling me, you know, don't put your backpack or your purse on the front seat of the car, because you'll be in the big city, and there's so much crime in the big city that they're gonna bust open your window at a stoplight and reach in and grab your purse or try to grab you. And so for the longest time, I would always put my purse under the seat or, you know, somewhere, blah, blah, blah. And then over time, I've lived in such different neighborhoods, rough neighborhoods, right? Like difficult, very blended neighborhoods in, you know, LA is like that, to the point where I started driving a convertible. And I thought this myth was actually such crap after years of living in the city that I would drive around in a convertible with my purse on the seat and was still left alone in a nice car. Like, no one ever tried to bum rush me at a city light and steal my purse out of the car. Now, I wouldn't have left it parked unattended with my purse just sitting there in the seat. Yeah. But nobody was going to try to bum rush me in the car with my purse. I mean, come on. Anyway, my point is, it was like, beware of the bad city folk. That was the lesson from the family. Beware of the bad, the evil city slickers.
Yeah, you know, it's, again, I grew up outside Los Angeles. So the urban myths, I guess the scary tales, were a little different. And I'm thinking back on them, most of them dealt with fright and fear.
Yes.
Right. The fog monster. Growing up in Upland, all you have to do is go Google it. There are ghost stories, and this isn't a ghost story show, but ghost stories are replete in Upland for a variety of reasons. I now live in another city that has very old Victorian homes, and we've got histories of suicides in homes and murders, and we have a park, a big huge city park where we're at right now, that would make you think you were in Europe in some of those old forests. And because it's so dense and it's so, there are all kinds of stories of things that live in the park. And I gotta tell you,
teenagers getting drunk and busy.
Actually, some of the lights that have been seen in the park have turned out to be homeless people having campfires. Yeah, so you've got those, but I've got to tell you, we've taken the grandkids through the park, and Scott has started urban myths with the children.
Oh no!
Well, part of it is fun, and part of it, I think it's fun. You'll understand why in a minute. Part of it is fun, and part of it is to help contain them and control them. So well,
to try to contain and control. Usually children are teenagers.
So the kids are running through the park, and I brought them to what I told them was the troll bridge.
Oh no.
And there's a troll that lives under the bridge.
Oh no.
Come on, you remember the fairy tale.
Oh, there's a literal troll carved under a bridge in Seattle that
there you go.
People must go and visit. It's huge. It's huge. You can climb on him. But yes, I remember the fairy tale. I just can't believe
it. So I have actually, and so here's the interesting thing. You know, if I'm not supporting this, but if you wanted to start your own urban myths, you could by simply saying, I was told there's a troll that lives under the bridge.
I think there's a lot of politicians. That's how they run their entire careers.
Oh, don't even get me started on the disinformation. I'm just asking the questions.
Well,
there's a great way to do it, right? The dis and misinformation. Look what we're dealing with right now, and it's not an urban myth. And I'm not meaning to make light of it, but you know, Russia's current claims of attacking Ukraine with a new missile launch, and everyone is saying it didn't happen.
Wow. So, and what about Brazil repeating what happened January 6th? An election, you know, was turned over, they said, because of fraud, and people stormed the Supreme Court and the old presidential office and their Congress building, claiming that it was a fraudulent election. It's like the exact repeat of United States.
Yeah. So, and again, I think.
But anyway, I don't think that was the topic of urban myths.
It's just interesting how these stories can
progress.
I think what happens is, I think we are at a unique time in history where new urban myths
can be created.
We have such a viral ability to put this out in the world, right?
I know.
Look at Twitter. And right. So, you know, one of the things that I don't know how you feel about this, Michelle, but in dealing with urban myths, in dealing with things that simply are like they test your credibility, I was looking up one and I'm looking to see if anyone has actually figured this out, because it sounded like an urban myth to me.
Yeah.
So let me just tell you what the urban myth was.
Okay.
One of our kids decided to travel, talk about risk-taking, decided to travel to the Amazon.
Okay.
And part of the training program for this, she's female, and part of the training program for this was, for women who are on their period, you cannot go in the Amazon because the piranhas will attack you.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, what a great way to keep people out of the Amazon River. And by the way, it extends.
But just women.
If you have a cut, anything with blood in it will attract them. Similar stories. I'm in California, right? You know, I've surfed, I've gone to the ocean, etc. Similar stories abounded with blood in the water and shark attacks. So here's the interesting thing that I discovered. There's no evidence that sharks in particular are attracted to any of that.
Yes, that's true.
But there is a long history in Native American and what they call Amero-Indian tribes of not allowing women during certain times to go in any river for that fear. But here's what makes the urban myth so bizarre, right? When you think about piranhas, they're more dangerous out of the water than in the water.
Oh, are they? Okay.
According to what I have found. And so there's kind of like a little bit of truth in there. And there's a little bit of, well, maybe that, who knows? Yes, but a friend of mine had this happen.
Right.
And so one of the big things that I always tell anybody who encounters a friend of a friend story is just continually ask, is this true?
Yes.
And we have such an ability today to what they call back channel.
Yeah. And fact check.
The bane of every politician's existence is the back channeling. and I have to warn the people I work with, you give a speech, understand you have people in the audience Googling everything you say.
Yes.
And it's just fascinating how people get so caught up in retelling. And I've often wondered if it isn't, if an urban myth retelling is nothing more than it's gossip on steroids.
Yes. In fact, there's a beautiful, we watched 5 days at Memorial, which was like a drama based off of true facts about the 5 days at Memorial Hospital after the Katrina hurricane came through New Orleans. Yeah. And there was this exact example of a nurse taking her break, going out to her car to smoke. And on her way in, there were a few people trying to get in the hospital, but they were at capacity. And so the security guard came out to try to address that they were at capacity and not take them in unless they were there for medical help. And what ended up happening throughout the halls of the hospital is it turned into, the woman was accosted, which she never said, that she was accosted by these people, that these were gang members. It rolled into, they tried to mug her, and then it rolled into, she was raped. And this was the story going on in the hospital, that if you go outside, you're going to get raped or mugged. And none of that had happened. It was just a telephone game, a gossip game on steroids, like how when you retell a story after story, it loses, you know, if you've ever played that telephone game, by the time it's so funny, by the time it comes around the circle, it's completely different than what you said.
Well, at the risk of provoking some of our listeners in a good way, I will tell you that what you just said reminds me of, again, some of the research I did in getting ready for the show was realizing how many urban myths came out of COVID.
Oh, I bet.
You know, everything from its origin story to how it spreads to you and I, actually, right before we went on air, we're talking about the vaccine.
And its repercussions for those, you know, like
a friend of a friend. Mm-hmm. I actually had a very, I'm not going to use their name because I really don't know what their position is on it right now, but a very well-known individual, someone who has a lot of connections in a lot of high places, tell me a COVID origin story.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those, it's like,
really?
you kind of go, really? And then it's coupled with their reputation. That's the problem. Right.
It is.
And of course it was, but somebody I know told me this. They don't know it from personal, right? So this is every lawyer's nightmare. This is hearsay on hearsay.
Hearsay on hearsay, exactly.
And when you get that and you couple it with the giver's reputation,
right?
It's like they don't normally do those things, but they're telling me this, and it's like, and it's like, now what do you do with that?
That's
And you can begin to see, right? If they're telling me, they're telling somebody else, right? It's not a secret that they're out there. That said, I've always loved the urban myths of we didn't land on the moon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some bad ones out there, like the Holocaust is fake. I mean,
well, that's I don't consider an urban myth. That is a little, that's a whole nother thing that we could get into.
Yes.
So one of our live listeners just wrote Area 51.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, a friend of mine, a friend of mine decided that he, being an avid ufologist or whatever they're called, decided, and by the way, he, at the time, he's moved since then, but he lived in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Again, one of those roamed in the circles with all the connections.
Okay.
Avid believer in UFOs. And a friend of his would watch the Area 51 planes leave the airport in Las Vegas, the unmarked airplanes where, and it's no secret, you can actually watch the planes land and take off, but they're unmarked airplanes, and the people get bussed in, and they get on the plane, and they get flown out, and they get flown back, and then off the bus, he decided he was going to go investigate Area 51. Mm-hmm. And before he did this, he actually told me he was going to go. Mm-hmm. Now, for those of you that don't know what Area 51 is, Area 51 is known throughout the world for its connection with UFOs and other.
It's an Edwards Air Force Base in Arizona? New Mexico.
Area 51's in Vegas.
Oh, is it?
In Nevada, yeah.
Oh, in Nevada. Oops. Okay. that tells you how closely I follow these things.
No, that's okay.
Maybe it's just the men in black have come and harassed me.
There you go.
Wiped my memory clean of all of my experiences.
Yeah. So it's in Nevada and within a driving distance of Las Vegas. And so he decided he was going to go there, and he told me he was going to go there. And, you know, frankly, I like this stuff. I grew up with Project Blue Book.
It's kind of fun.
I grew up watching all the shows.
We know there's stuff that goes on in the military that is secret, top secret. And, you know that.
You know, when I was a kid, here, I'll give it to you firsthand. I would tell you then I saw a UFO. Thinking back on it now, 50 some odd years later, I question whether what I saw was that.
Right.
But, you know, at that age and wild imagination, probably overactive imagination, I made a connection that, look, it's a UFO. And I was with my friend and with my sister and pointed it to them. They saw it too. That doesn't mean that's what we saw. That was the meaning we took out of it.
Okay.
So I was very interested that my friend was going to go. And time passed, and I was back with him again. And I said, whatever happened with Area 51? And he said, oh, I've got to tell you. He said, I actually didn't get very far. I said, really? No, duh. I saw Men in Black. I know what happens. and apparently, despite all the signs, despite all of the warnings, and despite all of the stuff, it's like, just don't go there. According to him, sure enough, he showed up, made it a literally short distance within that area.
The area.
And
The men in black came out.
They weren't men in black. They were men in armed cars that came out heavily armed that said, turn around now and just go.
Yeah.
You know, there are things like that where it's like not a friend of a friend. This is my friend telling me there's something going on at Area 51. My response is maybe it's just a secure Air Force base and you're not supposed to be there for whatever reason. But lots of documentaries and UFOs are making a comeback that I've seen, at least on the documentaries that are available online. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a current local myth spread, by the way, by some of my law enforcement friends.
Okay.
And you know who L. Ron Hubbard was?
Yes. Right?
The founder of Scientology.
Founder of Scientology, yes. And
that the rumor is, it's a rumor, but it's a great urban myth, is that the deep freeze that he supposedly in is up in Big Bear Lake, where Scientology supposedly has a large compound.
Okay.
He's cryopreserved up there. So, you know, it's very interesting that all, again, I love the urban myths that are just gossip on steroids. Uh-huh. And then you've got these people that should know better.
Uh-huh.
Because of their status, their education, their stature, and they're repeating some of this, and you go, well, God, if they believe it, then what if?
Yeah. So what do we do with this? Like, let's say, I mean, it can range everything from saying Bloody Mary in the mirror multiple times, the
Chupacabra,
Bigfoot.
Beetlejuice,
the ankle slicing car thief, the 27 club for celebrities dying at 27. Like, there are chain letters. I don't know if any of you have received chain emails where send this to five people. If you don't send it to five people in the next 5 minutes, something bad's going to happen. But if you do, something great is going to happen. Oh, when those were popular, they used to drive me crazy because I'm a skeptic, but I am also a little superstitious. I like, well, I don't want bad luck. And if it's easy for me to send this to five people, then why do I want to have the bad luck?
I grew up with, and we're going to do a show on old wives' tales, but among other things, I grew up with my grandmothers. Both of them would throw salt over their shoulder.
Oh, right, right. So like superstitions, right? But what do we do when these superstitions become almost obsessive, compulsive, life-limiting, fear-inducing things? Because that's, I guess my main concern is, you know, we love mysteries, as one of our live guests points out. We love mysteries and we love to kind of get ourselves into why and what if, and, you know, the mysteries of life. And but how do I don't know. I've never been to Area 51. Maybe there really are aliens there. I wouldn't presume that of all the vast universe, we're the only life form. I'm sure there's something out there anyway, but I don't know what that is. But what if it becomes life limiting? You know, now I'm losing friends because I'm so obsessed with aliens or believe in them, and I've lost my credibility. Or
I've watched, I will tell you right now what I am still seeing are the survivalists that believe the end of the world is coming.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes.
So I might think of it as an urban myth. To them, it's an urban reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've watched them and how that's affected them. Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing for me is to take a very lawyerly-like approach to an urban myth, right?
Okay.
One of my jobs as an attorney was to go into court and disprove the myth, the story that the plaintiff's lawyer was telling in order to get money. Mm-hmm. And so a big thing for me is always, what's the point of the urban myth?
Okay.
Let's start with that. If the urban myth serves you, then it's a great morality tale.
Okay.
Irrespective of source or reality, it's a great morality tale.
Okay.
That's number one. Where did it come from? The problem with an urban myth that I've experienced is that they are so steeped and intermeshed with cultural believability. And it's like, it's almost that could be true. It's just fake enough, but it's also just real enough that you can't distinguish between them. So while you might be able to discover a source, we've watched politicians perpetuate urban myths. You might not be able to discern truth from reality, which then leads me to my reality check. It's much like yours. Does something just smell wrong?
Yep. Your instincts.
Right. It's like, you know, I've got kids growing up, even today, they love scary stories. They love the adrenaline. They love the dopamine button. They love all of this stuff that the scariness does for them. Right. Growing up, I never went to a haunted house. I didn't want to do that. I don't do those. I don't watch scary movies. It doesn't do anything for me. But there are people that do that. If you realize it's pushing that button and that's serving you as entertainment, let's say, I'm cool with it. But if it's limiting you, keep going back to the cause and effect. And we don't have time during the show to do a herringbone or fishbone cause and effect consequence diagram, but I'm a really big believer in cause and effect. If you can't figure out the cause and it's got a bad effect, then maybe you should be questioning whether it's real.
Okay.
And I have, you know, again, I'll go back to the urban myth that we didn't land on the moon. It was all done on a soundstage in Hollywood.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. We don't know where it started. Could it be true? I don't know. Okay. Right. The reality is, I don't know if that's true or not. I watched the moonshot. I'm a NASA addict. I wanted to be an astronaut. I would like to believe it's not true. So that leaves me right in a little, God, what if? And then I go back to the practicality of, how many thousands of people have been involved in this? And I want you to look at your own lives and be very real. Look at your own lives and ask, when you've put out BS, you've said something that isn't true or something that just doesn't make sense. People call you out on it all the time where they go, wait a minute, Scott, I was there. That's not what happened. If in fact we didn't land on the moon and it was all done on a soundstage is true, then this is the best kept freaking secret in the world, because while there are urban myths about it, I don't have, at least in my world, I don't have anybody that I seriously consider to be a definitive source that says, you know what, Scott, we didn't go to the moon. In fact, quite the contrary. I've got people who've been rather high up in the in NASA who counter that entirely. So I got, you know, you balance those things. Bottom line is, use your common sense. Don't get carried away in the hysteria of urban myths.
So in other words,
there are no fog monsters.
Or there's, it's so hard to keep a secret. Like, secrets are best shared between people. So you see this all the time, right? So I'm going to tell you this, but don't tell anyone. And then that person goes and says, well, I need to tell you this about Scott, but don't tell anyone that I told you that. And then that person goes, oh, you know, do you know what Michelle told me, that Carolyn told me, that Scott said, but don't tell anyone. Now, like, there's so many people. This is how gossip happens.
Exactly. And so it's the same problem with gossip that we have with urban myths, and that you cannot, for the most part, discover the truth behind them.
Right.
What you can do is just, again, in my world, it's, is there a way to verify this one way or another?
Okay.
Right. Area 51. We know Area 51 exists. We know all of these reports have been let out.
Right.
We know, by the way, this is what adds to it. We know that the government does mis and disinformation.
Yes.
We know all of this stuff.
Yes.
And so it adds to the credibility of, God, this might be true because the government could be doing this, that the Men in Black concept.
Sure.
And the movie was cool. The movies were cool. And so for your own personal life, I just like to go back to, can you validate or verify that what you're hearing that's scaring the bejesus out of you is true or not?
Right.
And if you can't verify it, then question it. At least question it, and don't take the urban myths on as sacrosanct.
Right.
Because if it's from a friend of a friend.
Right.
That's what, again, in the legal profession, we call hearsay. And that's an out-of-court statement offered for the fact of the matter.
Yeah.
I want to say that again without turning you all into lawyers, because God knows we don't need any more. Wouldn't it be cool if lawyers were all just urban myths? Now,
I have a friend, Scott, who says that he's really seen lawyers.
I have really seen lawyers. Yeah. Really bad lawyers, bad, evil people lawyers. By the way, the boogeyman doesn't hide under your bed. He's in a courtroom.
I do have lawyers in my life that I love, though. I have to say that.
I trust I'm one of them.
You are one of them.
And so let me just again say hearsay.
Yeah.
And out of court, that means that people aren't in there. And here in the United States, I know it's different in some systems. We swear to the validity of it, right? You attest to it. An out of court statement, that means there's no validation to it, offered for the truth of the matter. And if you're encompassing anything that's an out of court, no verification statement offered for the truth of the matter, start questioning. And depending on who you are, you'll come down on one side of the validity of the myth or not, but don't let a myth run your life.
Yeah, I agree. Do your own research. It's not that hard.
Not anymore.
No.
So piggybacking on this, next week, we're going to talk about old wives' tales and home remedies.
Yes.
I'm going to caution everybody. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. We are not doctors.
Right.
We are not physicians. We're offering this for entertainment purposes, but oh boy, it's like, I think we all grew up with them. My family came from Europe, and it's lots of everything from right, the whole penny up, penny face down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, not to mention the ultimate cure for hiccups. Let's debate about that.
Oh, I got mine. Okay, yeah. So we're going to talk about all of this stuff. And between now and next week, do not step on a crack. It'll break your mother's back.
That's a great way to end it.
thank you, everybody. Please stay out of the way of the fog monsters. Yes. Until next week, please like, share, subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And we want to thank you for being part of 2023 with us. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.